to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer, Joe Metz, and Zach Graham.
Presented by the FTN Network.
Bringing you the analysis you need on breaking news, betting markets, and your fantasy lineups.
Welcome back, everybody. Tuesday, October 19th. I am your host, Joe Metz. We're back with another FTN NBA Podcast, the inaugural 2021-22 tip-off of the NBA season today, joined by my co-host, as always, Zach Graham at Kweiserberg DFS. Just a two-man booth tonight. No Adam, no Stefano. I know Stefano's probably cowering away watching the Nets right now. but Zach, you know, you and I were on the Dream Stream an hour ago, so long time no talk. How has the last hour of your life been?
It was fantastic, man. I got to watch some NBA regular season basketball and you know, chat it up with the subscribers in the FTN NBA Discord and kind of tilt the Patty Mills performance together, going 5 for 5 from the 3-point line in his first halftime, and also people tilting a Bruce Brown DNP. So I don't think anybody across the DFS industry saw that coming. But obviously we're here to kind of talk more like season-long fantasy, season-long awards, some of the extensions that were made at the deadline yesterday. So I'm excited to get into it, man. We're gonna have more of a presence on this podcast feed throughout the regular season.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So off the bat, you and I were talking behind the scenes. We're hoping to two podcasts a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, just like you said, plethora of season-long topics. We do have a podcast listener league season-long format that we have with FTN NBA subscribers. I'll kick it to you shortly to kind of explain just how cool this concept is and how inclusive it is. But we'll recap that every week, talk about our favorite bets, just trends throughout the season. We will still hit on DFS. They're just not going to be slate-specific shows. So, you know, before we kind of dive into these rookie extensions, some surprises, some ones that we thought were a little questionable, why don't you, so the NBA Listener League is your baby. Mm-hmm. So why don't you kind of explain, you know, it's obviously an easy concept. It's a season-long basketball league with 12 players, but why don't you kind of explain what the perks of it are and why it's such a cool concept?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the people that have been around, certainly the NBA channel for the last 18 months, know that I'm in there just about as much as I can be, you know, in between work and any other personal obligations. I love being with the subs and kind of growing those relationships and just building our FTN community. I've been in a lot of DFS communities throughout my, you know, multi-year DFS career, like a lot of players have. And it's not just because FTN pays me to say this, but like, this is my favorite one that I've ever been in. And so I just kind of was thinking, like, how can we, you know, just kind of give back a little bit and engage more with the subs outside of that chat, which is obviously, you know, busy at all hours of the night. I always wake up. I feel like sometimes you'd be like 7 a.m., open up the chat and there's people talking in there till 3 or 4 in the morning. So that's not always me, but I wanted to kind of engage more with some of the subs. So what we did was over the last couple of weeks, we opened up, I made a post in the Discord about this league, trying to kind of gauge interest. And the idea was we'd have us four. So the three hosts of the podcast, you, myself, Adam, and then kind of, you know, I guess, how I've been referring to him, at least, our guy on the couch, Stefano, who is essentially a host on this show, but I guess, you know, not in the intro, not on the marquee. So us four, 12-team league, so 8 spots for subscribers that were up for grabs. And you know, I kind of thought we would get maybe a little bit into the double digits in terms of people interested, but I think we ended up getting like 30 people that I sent invites out to that had indicated they wanted to try to join. And then I think 24 of those 30 made it into, we ran a little qualifier tournament during a preseason slate over there on DraftKings. So the top 8 finishers in that tournament made it into the league. And And I guess I could just read out. I'll try to remember. I'm looking at kind of their names in the league now. But if I can go off the top of the dome here, we've got B-Stew22 in the Discord. We've got Whammy in the Discord. Easy B made it in.
The legend.
The Discord legend Easy B is in there. Ezekiel Alba made it in.
Kruger's made it in.
Kruger made it in. Man, let me open up as we do this the Discord chat, because I've got a little channel with him. So Dello, again, I'm seeing like our subscribers' real names here, and I only know them by their Discord name. So yeah. J. Crow Longhorn is in here, another Central Texas guy like me. So two Longhorns in the league to Easy V's Sooner fandom. So yeah, man, it's if I missed one or two guys, I apologize. But any listeners will be able to get to know these guys better, because one of the perks of being in the league is we're going to do a segment once a week, kind of recapping a short segment, because I know not everybody's here to listen to recaps of our 12-team season-long league. But we're going to bring on each of those eight subscribers at some point during the season and kind of chat with them, not just about the league and how their team's doing and their matchup that week, but kind of try to get to know the subs a little bit better on the podcast. And so then I will for sure be able to name everybody by their real first name and not just their Discord name. And then the kind of grand prize of it all is the sub that wins the league, or I guess should say finishes highest, because I plan on winning the league, but the sub that finishes highest is going to win a full year subscription to the FTN NBA product for next NBA season. So shout out to the powers that be for allowing me to kind of organize the league and do this thing for our community. So I know my first matchup is against that our resident Canadian, Josh Kruger. You know him as Kruger's in the FTN NBA Discord. I think only Kevin Durant going in our matchup right now, and I have Durant. So I'm up 9-0 right now. We're feeling good with a
feeling
hot
good,
start, Joe.
Feeling good.
So, yeah, that's kind of what we're doing with the Listener League. And, I think it's going to be a fun year, both in the league itself and having those guests on the pod.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And I just think it'll allow us to highlight in words that don't come off like a requirement when we tout FTN. It'll come across a lot more genuine. Not that we aren't genuine, but it'll come across like these are real people that just love the community as much as we do. And it's I can echo what you said. I've been around the industry quite a bit, and there is not the NBA community specifically at FTN Daily is remarkable. It's a lot of fun, a lot of good people. And I'm excited that we get to kind of showcase it and almost brag about it to the rest of the community, because it is, I think, the best out there. So shifting gears a little bit, we hit on the fact that October 18th was the deadline for rookie extension signings for the 21-22 season. So this was a pretty notable class. We had a handful a while ago in the offseason. Trae Young signed a $207 million deal. Luka was 5-207. MPJ was 5-207. So they got those absolute max contracts. We saw Wendell Carter Jr. Recently get a 4-50. SGA get 5-172. And Robert Williams, our coveted Time Lord, 4-54. So those all happened before the deadline, at least a few days ago. I think Luka, Trey, MPJ, and SGA, I think those four were borderline locks to sign the rookie extension. Teams would have kind of been a little ignorant if they hadn't. I'm a little surprised by Wendell Carter's, if I'm being honest. I'm not saying I'm not a fan of it, but they have been teasing the emergence and the desire to experiment with Mo Bamba a little more. Wendell Carter had a lot of injury concerns coming into Orlando, and then he showcased those same concerns in Orlando. So what are your thoughts on the 4-50 deal for Wendell Carter Jr.? Because at the end of the day, I think dollar for dollar, it's a fine contract for the team.
Yeah, I think it works out well for both sides on paper. 4-50 for a guy who was the number 7 pick in 2018, so not that long ago. Obviously, all these guys, if they're eligible for the rookie extension, so not breaking any news there. But it is funny to look at Mo Bamba, who didn't get an extension, was in that same draft, was actually picked right before Wendell Carter, who was obviously selected by the Bulls and came over in the Vucevic deal last year. So the fact that they could have had Wendell Carter in that draft anyways, passing him up instead, taking Mo Bamba and then giving Carter Jr. The extension was kind of entertaining to me. But just from an organizational standpoint, I think we're both kind of on board with this being one of the most dysfunctional franchises in the league right now in terms of really not having much direction. So I think at worst, this is giving them a little bit of direction. Not breaking the bank for a guy who hasn't proven himself yet, but kind of locking up an asset.
Yeah, I agree. I also think it shows what direction they want to move with that center rotation. Like they're obviously, I think, going to utilize both, but I think there is now a clear preference. But I think this is just another step. I'd say so far, this is probably the third step in the right direction towards the total rebuild. You know, I've hit on the fact that in his tenure as a GM, John Hammond is a respectable GM, but he's never been one to embrace the rebuild. You know, he sat in the NBA purgatory with Milwaukee where you just want to sneak in the playoffs, but it's not good enough to like ever move out of it. Finally embraced that last year with Orlando when they shipped off Aaron Gordon, Vucevic, and Fournier. I think drafting Jalen Suggs was very smart, even though they do have Cole Anthony, they have Markelle Fultz. I do think of those three, Jalen Suggs has the highest upside, so I think they made a good selection there when Toronto passed on him. And now actually deciding to go with a young center and give them an extensive chance, because they could have very well just not given either of them an extension. When this happened, I was targeting Mo Bamba somewhat heavily as my third center in a lot of best ball teams. I still like Mo Bamba this season, but I did then kind of switch up and start targeting a little more Wendell Carter Jr. because it might be a little more indicative of his role this year when he's healthy. What about Robert Williams, center for the Celtics? 4-year, $54 million. So very, very similar and comparable to Wendell Carter. You know, Boston does not have Tristan Thompson anymore, brought back Al Horford. I feel like the time to shine for Time Lord is now.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Robert Williams is he'll have stretches where it just looks like it's all clicking for him. Like, like there's a more than serviceable NBA center on both ends of the court. Obviously, I don't know if we can say elite yet, but upper tier rim protector is the Time Lord. And so similar deal to Wendell Carter's 4 for 54. I think it's good on paper for both teams. And just something that Boston, I think, has been missing for a long time. So as much as I said, he goes through those stretches where he looks great, I think he also has stretches where he gets a little bit lost, or he's like, I sometimes he almost looks like a baby deer to me in terms of like, he doesn't really control his body all that well, and he can get hurt because
he tripped over his own, got hurt last year. I don't mean to compare these players because they as players are not similar, but it's the same kind of thing I saw with Thon Maker. It's almost like his body is just too big for his neurological coordination right now. I don't know what it is, but if he can just rein in that physical body control, I mean, sky's the limit. Like, this man can block any shot that comes to the rim. He's very, very high motor guy. He's not an overly large center, but I think he's very athletic for today's NBA. I think he's as close to a traditional center as you can be and still be successful in today's NBA, because he's not strictly a low post presence. So moving on now, you know, there were players that were extended on Monday, in the days leading up to Monday's deadline. Jaren Jackson Jr., 4 for 105. Mikal Bridges, 4 for 90. Kevin Herter, 4 for 65. Landry Shamet, 4 for 43. And Grayson Allen, 2 for 20. We can kind of briefly hit on all five of these. I think all five are worth a conversation. You're grinning ear to ear. Like, we haven't talked about Grayson Allen enough, who right now is putting together a productive game. So why don't we start with Grayson Allen, 2 for 20? I'll kick it off because I'm the Bucks fan. My two cents here. One, I dog Grayson Allen a lot and make jokes. I think he's good for this Bucks team. I think he has a role. My biggest takeaway from this, especially because Dante wasn't extended, was that not just they might be a little unsure about Dante's health long term this season, because he still, I don't think, has been cleared for contact.
No.
The other thing that I'm looking at, you look at the Bucks draft capital over the next 5 years, you look at their roster, and there are very little trade assets. I think Dante is going to be that token trade asset this year when they need to make, if they need to make a move at the deadline. It's going to be easy to move an expiring contract, especially a young one, where a team can kind of figure out what they want to do with. So my takeaway here is you get Grayson Allen 2 years from now. I think this could look like a good contract. I think it's a good contract now, but I think it could look like a bargain in 2 years, and you kind of free up a trade chip. So what are your thoughts on the move? I guess we, talk about both Grayson and Dante not getting the extension.
Yeah, man, I think you kind of just, you hit it right on where I was thinking with it. Like, Dante now is in play at the deadline. Like, yeah. I don't know what for yet. I think we'll be able to kind of see where the glaring needs turn up for the Bucks, right? Because I think this is maybe the team in the league that just has no holes right now outside of injury. Like, obviously, Bobby Portis is not active for opening night. Rodney Hood kind of perpetually injured, yeah. So he's not active. And you mentioned Dante himself not being cleared yet. So I think that's interesting to kind of keep an eye on as we go through the season. Obviously, Dante will need to get back cleared and playing for him to actually have that trade value. But in terms of Grayson Allen, like, we can put our jokes aside for a second and try to look at this objectively. Like, I love this deal. The fact that you only have to spend like right around 10% of your cap on a guy like Grayson Allen to play a role on the defending champions, and like with DiVincenzo out, a very important role starting for this team. I love it. Like, putting aside my thoughts about Grayson Allen and some of his antics that don't necessarily have to do with basketball movements on a court, right? Like, this guy is a very capable knockdown shooter. He's scrappy as hell. Like, he's going to bust his ass every minute that he's out there. So I don't know how, as a Bucks fan, again, just from a basketball filling the need for the team from that standpoint, I don't know how you can't like this.
Yeah, I agree. You know, Bucks fans were not very receptive to this signing and the trade when we got him. And it was more so just Wisconsin Badgers fans
who
were so hell-bent from his days at Duke. I completely agree with what you said. So looking at the rest of these, Jaren Jackson Jr., I think, could be arguably the most polarizing one. I think his ceiling is astronomical. Mm-hmm. But he played 11 games last year. We saw he came, and the year prior, he missed a lot of time as well. I don't think he played, aside from maybe a couple games in the bubble for Memphis. If he can stay on the court, he's a player you can build around with Ja.
Yep.
Would he be a player that you are okay taking this kind of gamble with in terms of their bill of health?
Yeah, I think just looking at where Memphis is at, right, we always talk about how deep they are as a team, but there's not a ton of separation, especially last year when Triple J was out for a lot of the year and you kind of just had Ja and J-Val picking up the majority of the scoring load and getting a lot of production here and there from one night it's Dylan Brooks, one night it's Kyle Anderson, Desmond Bain would have some big games, other guys off the bench. And so I think you have to start taking a stand if you're Memphis. Obviously, Ja is your main piece long-term, but shipping out J-Val, you bring in Steven Adams. He's certainly not a long-term piece. So who are we going to pay? Getting Jaren Jackson Jr. for $20 million for 4 years, obviously had some injury issues, but I don't think that's something you can necessarily forecast with him or say that it's going to persist, right? So getting him for right around $20 million a year for the guy he could become, certainly in two or three seasons, that could end up being a very nice deal for the Grizzlies and allow them some flexibility going forward if they do continue on the trajectory that I think their front office believes that they're on. And certainly from the player side, I don't think any guy his age is going to scoff at $105 million.
Oh, absolutely not. A couple of the other guys. One, this was a really good draft class, like a very good draft class. Holy cow. I absolutely love the 4 for $90 from Mikal Bridges. I think he is very deserving of this contract. I think he is arguably the best 3-and-D player in the NBA, and I don't think he's regarded as anything close to that. Yeah. You know, you kind of saw this coming with him coming out of Villanova, but people just don't like when players play more than a year in college. They just, the more you play in college, the more of a negative it becomes. And, you know, I get it when you play 4 years. But look at Malcolm Brogdon. He played 4 years at Virginia. Mm-hmm. Is there any massive point you want to make about Mikal Bridges besides just giving him his flowers?
Yeah, not so much. I think it's fine. But and also I need to check my math on Triple J, because 100 divided by 4 is 25, not 20.
Oh, he made like 26, 27 million a year.
So like 25-ish.
This man's making a lot of money, yeah.
it doesn't change my thoughts too much on that. But obviously good for him, and back to Bridges, I think it's just fine. You know, he's one of those guys that I think they needed to retain to kind of keep this young core together, because you know, I have plenty of thoughts about the owner, Robert Sarver, and I can talk about that. We'll get to him. But I don't feel really too strongly one way or the other on this. I think it's fine. And I think, to your point, it's a deal that could really turn into a value for Phoenix if Bridges continues to ascend on both ends of the floor. You know, you mentioned his defensive capability. That's huge for the Suns team, and it'll be a key if they want to stay a contender out west for the next couple years. But if I may, let's flip to the other extension that Phoenix gave out in Landry Shamet. I don't have an issue, Joe, with $10 million a year. But no, why do we need Landry 4 years? Why?
It's the 4 years that they must see something in him that nobody else does. It's the combination of the 4-year deal. You know, like, you give him a contract 2 for $20 like Grayson Allen. No, I don't think anyone would scoff at it. I really don't. But and again, like, we'll get to DeAndre Ayton. He will be a hot topic. And I understand some rationale as to why they didn't re-sign him in today's NBA. I get it. But if you're shelling out $40 million to Landry Shamet, then I just don't get it. You want to keep this core together. Like, you can argue DeAndre Ayton is like, there is an argument why he is the reason you made it as far as you did in the playoffs. The guy was averaging like 22 and 15 on like 80% from the field. I don't know what Phoenix is doing right now. And they also overpaid Chris Paul this offseason, and I think both of our opinions. So, this is their window. Like, their title window is the next 3-4 years, and I don't even think it's a very wide window whatsoever. I was left speechless about the Landry Shamet. Just like, jaw was on the ground. Kevin Huerter, 4 for $65. I'm kind of torn, indifferent on this one. It's not one I care much about. My only thing is they're bound to have a very crowded wing for a long time. You know, with Cam Reddish coming back, DeAndre Hunter healthy now. And they re-signed John Collins. So, like, the 2-3-4 of this team is going to be crowded. But I think they are all good players.
Yeah, like you said, the Hawks roster as a whole right now is extremely crowded. They're kind of like if Memphis, like, leveled up at almost every position.
Yes, yeah, that's right? A very good comparison. Yeah.
I mean, because the fact that you've got Trey, Bogdan Bogdanovich in the backcourt, now DeLon Wright, and Sharif Cooper backing them up. I assume Sharif is going to spend a lot of time in the G League this year, but somebody who I think both of us thought was a little bit underdrafted falling to the end of the second round. On the wing, you mentioned Huerter, DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish. I believe Solomon Hill is still there. Obviously, Danilo Gallinari, you mentioned they re-signed John Collins. Clint Capella still there. Onyeka Okongwu on the IR right now and on the men. So, Gorgui Dieng, how could I leave out the gorgeous Dong? But that's what, like 11, 12, 13 players that are all deserving of being in not just an NBA rotation, but an NBA rotation for a good team. I'm not familiar enough, admittedly, to make big time judgments on what the Hawks are doing with their cap sheet.
Yeah.
I do think this franchise has been really well run. since kind of the Budenholzer Hawks and their run and not being able to get over the hump and that team kind of being shipped out over time and all these young guys being brought in. I think the future is bright, and I've got no ill will towards this contract. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I completely agree. So let's shift to the players. There are a number of players who did not sign extensions. I think some are expected, Marvin yeah. Bagley. I don't think anyone thought he would, except the whole thing that came out today. So on October 19th about how that he was informed that he is not even a part of the rotation.
I did not see that.
Oh, you did. Let me pull this up. As I'm pulling it up, I believe it was his agency that posted a screen. Like it came out like a not press release, but just a quote.
Sure.
And I'm going to read it off live on the podcast. And this comes from Excel Sports, which is his agency.
Okay.
Sacramento has informed Marvin Bagley he is not in the opening night rotation, which is completely baffling. It's clear that they have no plans for him in the future, and yet pass on potential deals at the deadline last year and this summer based on quote-unquote value. Instead, they choose to bring him back but not play him, a move completely contradictory to their quote-unquote value argument. This is a case study in mismanagement by the Kings organization. For one, the entire Kings organization is a case study in mismanagement. I think you and I can both agree on that. I don't know how else Kings. To explain that.
Kings.
I think Marvin Bagley still has gas in the tank. How much, I don't know. You know, he's one of those players that is probably out of the lineup more than he's in it. But I think the way they mishandled this is just completely inappropriate. They didn't trade him because they said they had a plan for him, and I guess their plan was to sit him. So he couldn't play. Nonetheless, I don't think anyone expected him to get the rookie extension.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody that's paying attention to the NBA zeitgeist was a little bit surprised that Bagley wasn't moved at the deadline last year.
Yeah.
And didn't really see the long-term future for him here in Sacramento, but holy cow, are they going overboard with this? Like, you're not going to play the guy?
How do you
Why is he still there? Yeah. Why is he? Yeah. Why is he? I just don't get it. And it just adds another chapter to Kings. The Kings saga. Yeah, Kings. That's really all you have to say, right? And just like looking at this man, like, I guess we can get into Ayton next because he was the number one pick. But so the number one and number two pick in this draft that we both agree was loaded. Looking back now, the 3, the 4, the 5, the 7, all getting extensions. One and the 2 left out to dry.
So, you brought up DeAndre Ayton is going to be the one we're going to talk about the most here. I think everyone expected him after the finals run to get this extension. You know, Chris Paul had even said, we are going to get this man paid.
Mm-hmm.
Little did we know Chris Paul meant he is helping me get paid. But I think there's two things here. One, I understand why you don't want to invest heavily in a traditional center in today's NBA. Jaren Jackson got the bag. Jaren Jackson shoots a ton of threes and does it, mm-hmm. Well, as off-kilter and awkward as a jump shot can be. But I don't know what else DeAndre – it makes me feel like no matter what he did, they were not going to extend him because he did as much as he possibly could for that team when it mattered the most.
I mean, this is just – this. Robert Sarver is incompetent. Like, whether he is – serving cold nachos as Charles Barkley would say, or he is ranting about Greg Popovich sitting his stars in a preseason matchup. I mean, this guy just has mismanaged this franchise through good times and bad. Like, there's a reason that Phoenix has not won a title for his entire tenure and has spent many years kind of toiling at the bottom of the league when a team in that kind of market, like, players want to go to Phoenix. But I really do think that the owner is a significant roadblock in the success of this franchise. So say what you want about the center position and who should get paid and what style of center is best in the league right now. this guy deserved an extension. Yeah. Maybe you don't want to give him the I assume he was eligible for the 200 something million. Maybe not quite if he hasn't got,
but he,
you know, maybe he hasn't picked up the all NBA. Yeah. Like there's certain qualifications you need, I think, for that max.
He may have been in that, the SGA, like 172,
like 172. Yeah.
That's probably what I would put.
But like this guy carried you to the finals defensively. In my opinion, like the one thing I remember about DeAndre Ayton's playoffs, outside of obviously the Valley Oop, right, is how like every single game I'm getting the the audio cut-ins on TNT or on ABC or whatever the game was on, of him just commanding the defense and always talking, and his defensive mobility improved immensely last year. And obviously his offensive capabilities were expanded when Chris Paul came to that team. So I just think he deserved the deal. I think the Suns needed to keep him happy and also prove to not only their current players, but anybody who wants to come to Phoenix in the future, that they take care of their guys. And to me, this is a significant step back in that regard.
But they took care of Landry Shamet, and that is apparently all that matters. So, I mean, he's probably not going to be a Sun next year. Where he ends up, I don't know. But he's going to help a team. And I think Phoenix is going to look very dumb if he develops any type of mid-range game or even further back in any type of consistency. They're going to be in a lot of trouble. Looking at the other names on the list, Colin Sexton, I don't think anyone saw that. An extension coming from there, given how aggressive Cleveland's been in trying to move him. Miles Bridges, I'm kind of indifferent on. I do think them bringing Kelly Oubre in the offseason kind of hindered his chances at an extension, though. I if I were Charlotte's staff and management, would have wanted to extend Miles Bridges because he plays so well with LaMelo Ball, who is the future of this franchise. Mm-hmm. You know, he's combo 3-4, so he's behind one of the most oft injured players in basketball and Kelly Oubre, who I don't think hit anything besides a dunk until like 3 weeks into the season last year. I think his ceiling is like, I like Miles Bridges quite a bit. I do think he's more than just like a highlight reel, but holy cow, watching him on a highlight reel is a ton of fun. But Lonnie Walker, one of them. You're the Spurs guy. Talk to me here.
Hey, I'm glad, like, when I looked at the list of extensions, who signed, who didn't, that Lonnie was on here, because then I didn't have to manufacture some other way to bring up the Spurs on this podcast where they're really not relevant. But this is something that I really enjoy as a fan in terms of the direction of the franchise. I didn't think that he was somebody they should extend. But I feel bad because Lonnie Walker, another one of the guys that just does all the right things, says all the right things, genuinely seems to be a really caring person, somebody who has shared some of his past experiences and struggles, and you know, outwardly tries to use his platform, to do some good off the court. And that's something that I'll always have a soft spot for. But when it comes down to the cap sheet, I don't think he was somebody that the Spurs should have prioritized, and I'm glad they didn't. I do hope that, from a Spurs fan standpoint, I hope that they're able to trade him at the deadline and get some sort of asset for him. But my ultimate desire for Lonnie Walker is that he finds a home, and maybe he re-signs with San Antonio for a team-friendly deal. But wherever he ends up, I hope he gets paid a fair amount and is happy. So that's my sappy Spurs corner for tonight. And just to kind of close out Miles Bridges, I just don't know, like, what kind of contract are you going to give him? You know, like, is he somebody that you see playing a huge role in, the 2024 Eastern Conference Finals when LaMelo Ball is a star and he's led the team to this precipice of a finals appearance? Like, is Miles Bridges in 3 years somebody that's out there in crunch time?
Yeah,
I don't think so.
If you're looking at, like, you know, if I'm going to look at the contracts, the extensions that were handed out and had to, you know, compare him to one, I think I'd be okay with a 4 for 50 or 4 for 65. I think I'd be okay with those for Miles Bridges. But I you cannot justify anything. You can't give me a 4 for 90 like his brother got. I don't know about that. Other players, right? Mo Bamba we hit on, did not get extended. Dante we kind of hit on as well. And then, yeah, like Colin Sexton, I think it's just widely regarded that he's not going to be a Cav. And this is Darius Garland's backcourt. So that kind of wraps up. And Ricky Rubio, yeah. Except I think Rubio being there is very good for Darius Garland.
I think it's telling. Like, you're going to ship Sexton sometime in the middle of the season, and Rubio's going to be the starter.
And they also brought in a point guard who, playstyle-wise, is quite literally the exact opposite of Colin Sexton.
Yep.
So absolutely. Yeah, I agree. So that wraps up all of the players who were eligible for a contract extension. So before we get out of here, I'll take a little bit of time, and we probably should have done this sooner. It's probably usually the most anticipated part of the podcast every year is the preseason awards, and not obviously rewarding preseason performance, but our award predictions for the 21-22 season. Instead of our 4-man booth that we had last year, I'm excited to just have a 2-man booth here and get really selfish and cannibalize all the time with you and I. So we're going to run through MVP, Rookie of the Year, Most Improved Player, 6-Man of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, and the NBA Champions. So I'll kick it to you first. We'll start at the top with MVP. Who do you got for the 21-22 NBA season?
So I'm going to repeat here with my pick that was unsuccessful last year, and I believe also the chalk again. And maybe this is more with my heart than with my bankroll, but Luka Doncic, I just think that this is the time. I think we've seen in the preseason that if anything, his stats, his fantasy rates especially, are going up. They're not going to go down. Stay the same at worst. And I think this team, obviously, Rick Carlisle getting out of there, a lot of turmoil in Dallas, which is not really the norm for that franchise, especially really since Dirk got there. But obviously the whole Haralabob thing and Jamal Mosley thinking that he's going to get the job, and then he goes to Orlando and they hire Jason Kidd. So I really think that, you know, say what you want about Jason Kidd, and I have before. I'm not a huge fan, especially from a coaching standpoint. But I do think he's going to be good for Luka's MVP resume. And if the Mavs get to 50 wins, I believe their over-under was like 48.5. I think I took a slight under. But if they get over that number, I think it's going to be really hard for people not to vote for Luka. Because if you look at the rest of that roster, like, we've joked for a while about the Tim Hardaway trade, right? Where Kristaps Porzingis was included. Like, there's not really a number two on this team. It's kind of a 3A and a 3B between Hardaway Jr. and Kristaps Porzingis. And maybe Porzingis takes a step back towards where we thought he was going to go in terms of his career. But it's all Luka all the time. And that's my pick.
Yeah, I like it. I don't even know if it's that chalky, to be honest. I feel like more on Durant, but I do like the Luka.
He's climbing.
He was my pick last year. Yeah. No surprise here. I'm going with Giannis, and I'm really, really trying to keep my homerism out of it. But and again, I told myself and I told you guys that I would try and stay away from using preseason as a big justification, but. You know, you said before we hopped on that Giannis is the type of player right now that like deserves MVP every year, but obviously the league's not going to do that. You know, say if he wins this upcoming season, he could have justified a four-peat, which is, I don't know if it's ever been done before. Again, it's preseason basketball, but Giannis was getting his run against starters. I'm not saying it was meaningful time. I know it's not. And again, I know it's preseason, so take it with a grain of salt, but jump shot does not look more fluid, but it looks, he looks more confident, elbows in, releases quicker. You don't need to go from Giannis to Klay Thompson. We need you to go from Giannis to Grayson Allen, Giannis to Drew Holiday. Like, you don't even need to be Chris Middleton. And he looked like that. He looked good. And the free throw routine, that's not going to carry weight in his MVP conversation. But if he has his 5-second free throw routine, if anything to me, it's just telling about his confidence. And if he's playing with confidence, he knows he has a ring. He knows he's the best in the world. It's hard to find someone that's going to stop him. The only thing that I will continue to throw out on this damn podcast is James Harden is still 20-1 to win MVP on DraftKings.
Ludicrous.
It shouldn't have been 20-1 when Kyrie was in.
I know.
I don't understand what the deal is here. Like, he's at 28-8 early in the fourth. This is at this stage in the game. This is going to be every night from him. Like, he's going to be a walking triple double. I if you haven't taken the bet, if you haven't taken the bet yet, I don't know what you're doing. Just do it. I got it at 25-1 at Caesars, and I got it at 20-1 at DraftKings Sportsbook. It is still available on DraftKings Sportsbook. So why don't we head to Coach of the Year? We get that one out of the way, and then talk about the rest of the players and teams. Who do you have for Coach of the Year?
Before I jump into that, I'm going to just do a little personal tilt session here. James Harden just came out of the game 6.5 minutes to go, down 17. I have the over on his 8.5 assists, and if he ends the game at 8, I will be upset. Anyways,
do we think he's not checking back in? He'll. I think he'll get one more rotation. Depending on the game goes.
My bankroll hopes so. Anyways, Coach of the Year. So I'm actually going, and I know this is chalk because I checked the odds. I'm going Steve Nash. I think that if Kyrie sits the entire year, obviously that has amplified the interest in a Kevin Durant or a James Harden MVP bet. And I think if those guys are going to win MVP, then Steve Nash is probably going to win Coach of the Year because it means that they fulfilled the expectations even without Kyrie Irving. They probably won 60 games. And at that point, unless somebody else comes out of nowhere, I think it's going to be Steve Nash. And I think he's shown, I don't know what the right word is. Maybe it's the wrong term, but I feel like great reverence in the way that he's handled himself, not just throughout this Kyrie vaccine fiasco, but kind of just dealing with all of these massive personalities that he has on this team, not just the three All-Stars, but kind of the former All-Stars on the team. He's handling Blake Griffin. He's handling LaMarcus Aldridge. He's handling Paul Millsap. And not that those guys are, prima donnas or anything like that. They don't seem to cause a ton of issues in the locker room. But, I leave out somebody like Patty Mills, one of the greatest Olympic scorers of all time. You know, that guy, can be tough to handle on the court or off the court. So my pick is Steve Nash.
I like it. It makes sense. At the end of the day, people talk about chalk. They're chalk for a reason. My pick is Nate McMillan with Atlanta.
Mm-hmm, I like that.
The change that we saw when he took over, I'd say probably 60% of the way through the season last year.
Yeah.
It almost seemed like they brought him in knowing exactly what was going to happen when he was brought in as an assistant. But I have the Hawks finishing as my 3 seed in the East right now. And I think if they do that, Nate McMillan should be a favorite for Coach of the Year because that I think their expectations are probably 5 right now.
Sure.
I think people still have like Miami over them. I think there's arguments for Philly. But I think this team has a ton of talent. It's hard to find a glaring hole with this team.
Uh-huh.
I think, Stefanos hit on it numerous times. Trae Young has the true ceiling to be like a top 5 player in the NBA at this rate he's going right now. And I think Nate McMillan helps him. I think his defense has improved. And I think a lot of this has to do with Nate McMillan's schemes. Like, he doesn't necessarily just hide Trae Young. He just knows where to position him enough to mitigate the liability that he can be defensively. I really like that they brought back John Collins and gave him an extension. I'm very, very high on John Collins as a player. I just think McMillan has a ton to work with. I think the team expectations, like the public expectations, are just a little lower than they should. So I think it might be easy for him to kind of shatter them, which obviously bodes well for his case for Coach of the Year. We're gonna do champs last. We'll do Rookie of the Year, Most Improved, DPOY, Sixth Man. So Rookie of the Year, who are you going with?
So I'm going Jalen Green, the number 2 pick to the Houston Rockets, played in the G League last year. And that's something that I think is going to be to his benefit. We saw him have a great summer league, kind of just to put it mildly. Like, he really impressed me. I think he impressed a lot of other people. And having a year at the G League level, obviously you're not quite in the big leagues yet, but the G League, I think you could argue, is either the second or third best league in the world in terms of raw talent. on the basketball court. And the fact that he, you know, kind of a volume shooter, but I think he's going to put up enough stats for this Houston team that he could, I think he's going to beat out Cade Cunningham just in kind of the public perception and certainly the writers who have votes, you know, in this rookie of the year race. And just kind of looking down the rest of the draft, I don't see, like, you look at Evan Mobley, I think there's too many bigs there currently for him to really outshine those top two guards. Scotty Barnes, who I kind of thought long and hard about. We've had a lot of discussion about him on our previous podcast, especially doing the best ball drafts. We've heard Nick Nurse talk about how big of a role he's going to play. I just don't think his stats are going to be as flashy. I don't think he's going to be on SportsCenter as much. Your House of Highlights, your TikTok, all that stuff. I think that's going to belong more to Jalen Green. And you could make an argument for Jalen Suggs out in Orlando. But again, Orlando, we talked about the crowded backcourt. Cole Anthony's there. RJ Hampton, Markelle Fultz will be back at some point. Michael Carter Williams will be back at some point. I just don't know if he will be able to do enough in Orlando to separate himself. So I'm going Jalen Green.
Yeah. Jalen Green is also who I'm going. Jalen Green also, and I hate to kind of rely on these squeaky wheel narratives, but I feel like almost every interview he has talks about how he deserved the first pick. He feels slighted. He wants to win rookie year to prove everyone wrong. You know, he wants to get up for these games against Detroit, against Cade Cunningham. Like, when it comes to the NBA, I do think narratives and, like, confidence play more of a role than any other sport because it is a bit more of an individual team sport. And I think Jalen Green is going to have a green light quite literally for 82 games. So he's going to have all the opportunity he needs. If he can do it efficiently, I think he wins rookie of the year. But I do think, you know, on the other end of that, there's the chance for him to be a very inefficient player. Like, and I don't mean to dog Anthony Edwards when I say this, but efficiency is really the only thing that held them back from not winning rookie of the year because LaMelo missed time. I just don't want to see the same thing happen to him against someone like Cade Cunningham, who is already missing time. He's scheduled to be out for the home opener or the season opener. So I am with Jalen Green. I think there's a downside here, but I also think the ceiling is just astronomical here. Most improved player, I'll kick us off. I'm going with Jordan Poole, and I swear to God, this is not just because of the preseason. He had a really productive season in 2020 and 21. Filled in for Steph Curry admirably, had some inefficiencies at points, but you know, throughout the offseason, the team has raved about the work he's put in, the effort he's put in, the improvements he's made. And we saw it in the preseason, over 21 points per game, operated with the second unit. He's starting there. You know, obviously you guys might be listening to this after the season opener, but he started at shooting guard next to Steph Curry, once thought of just the supplemental player. So if he continues to start, obviously that kind of takes the argument to the next level here. My concern, my only downside here is when Klay comes back, will he have enough room to operate? Because now Otto Porter's here, and you know they don't play the same position. That's just another player off the bench who will take shots, someone who's been in the league longer. But I like Jordan Poole, Milwaukee's own. So who are you taking for most improved player?
Yeah, so I'm still kind of deciding between two. So I'm going to go with two as long as you'll allow it. My first guy, and two kind of my favorite abbreviated names, SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, out in Oklahoma City. Maybe set the record for the earliest / youngest player to be shut down. You know, I think Oklahoma City shut him down with like 30 games left in the season or something like that. Like, it was really pushing the limits of tanking. And I think this year he should get a little bit more time, enough to put together kind of a full resume to make a push for the most improved player. Obviously somebody that I love to target in best ball before the season, and somebody that I drafted in the listener league, and somebody that I do love to play in DFS when the time is right. But my other option, going back to Houston, so kind of the other guy who's going to have the green light in that Houston backcourt is Kevin Porter Jr. And I think he's somebody that has obviously flashed, certainly amongst the basketball diehards, flashed some massive upside, both single game and just kind of career-wise. Notorious soup thrower, at least when he was in Cleveland. But as long as he can put that kind of stuff behind him, this is a guy we've already seen put up 50 points in an NBA game. And so I love him getting the opportunity here as the Nets pull their players. Bruce Brown enters for what I believe is the first time, and James Harden will hit the under on his assists. So I will be deflated as I say SGA and KPJ, kind of my dual picks for most improved.
I like it. Do you know KPJ wins most improved? What do you think that does to the odds of Jalen Green winning Rookie of the Year? Does Houston want KPJ to operate as their point guard?
That's how I've kind of taken it, especially sitting John Wall down, because point guard is not Jalen Green's profile. And Kevin Porter Jr., I think, proved late last season that he's somebody that can play the one. And not just as a distributor, but obviously as a scorer and somebody who has threatened triple doubles multiple times last year. So that is a good point. I'm not sure that they could win both, but I think it just kind of illustrates the upside statistically and from a fantasy standpoint that both of us see in that Houston backcourt.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of production that should come from that backcourt is astronomical.
Not going to win a lot of games probably, but
yeah,
but
the doesn't matter if the stat sheet is stuffed. Moving on, defensive player of the year, you and I are both in lockstep here with Anthony Davis. I think the only thing potentially in his way is injuries, and that's been the case almost his whole career, right?
Yeah I mean, it's, and I think also for both of us it may be like giving the middle finger to Rudy Gobert. I think maybe more you, that you just kind of dislike him, and me, I'm frustrated as somebody who is kind of a Jazz enthusiast from afar. I love watching that team. I love Donovan Mitchell, and I do think that Rudy Gobert, for some of the missteps or kind of decisions he's made along the way in his career, specifically around the COVID pandemic, I think the guy gets the short end of the stick from just kind of the basketball back and forth, especially on social media. But I do like Anthony Davis here, because if the Lakers are going to kind of get back to the top of the West, particularly in the regular season seeding, which is what these awards will be based on,
yes,
Anthony Davis kind of anchoring that defense will be key. Like, adding Russell Westbrook does not improve your team's defense. And a lot of arguments have been had about if he actually improves your team's offense. But talking just specifically about defense here, I think Anthony Davis's responsibility on the defensive end is going to be raised this year. And if he stays on the court and the Lakers continue, or I guess not continue, but the Lakers meet expectations in terms of win-loss record, then Anthony Davis will be right there at the end for defensive player of the year.
Yep. 100% agree. Quick sidebar. Down 14 with 4 minutes left, and Steve Nash takes James Harden and Kevin Durant out while Bud is putting Giannis back in.
Yeah, well,
if
so I do know.
A white flag.
Two and a half to go. My man Sandro Mamukelashvili in for Giannis. So the white flag raised by the Nets, and then Bud kind of follows suit pulling his guys. But yeah, I mean, I think Steve Nash, that's a fine move. Like, ring ceremony. They've been trailing the entire game. It's not like, I don't know. It seemed like the Bucks had their number tonight.
Good. That's what I like to hear. final player award before you to our final or our champion predictions is sixth man of the year. I'm going with Tyler Hero. I keep talking about confidence, but Hero's another player that is clearly trying to prove a point this year. I don't think his name belongs anywhere close to that Luka and Trey ring. One, buddy, you're not a starter. These guys just signed 4-year, $207 million contracts. They're all NBA, MVP candidates and franchise players. I'm not saying you can't get there one day, but you need to start some games first. But I don't think the drop-off in production from year one to year two is as drastic as people make it out to be. You know, he averaged just about the same amount of points, and efficiency went down from the field a bit. But, you know, we talked about on the podcast before, I just think some unrealistic expectations were set in the bubble, where it's really hard to consider that 100% real basketball. Like, if you're a rookie shooting in an open gym, it's going to be a lot different than being a rookie shooting in a packed stadium full of 20,000 people. But he has something to prove here this year. You know, he'll be playing off the bench. No Kendrick Nunn or Goran Dragic, which is huge. You know, he's not necessarily going to be fighting for touches with Kyle Lowry. But he'll come in as the primary ball handler in the second unit now. And Kendrick Nunn was the player that probably took away the most usage from him. Those guys are gone. Hero's still going to have a very large role. I'm expecting him to take a nice step forward and win Sixth Man of the Year this year.
Yeah, so I think you're spot on with the you know, bubble Hero talk. And I also think that the fact that the NBA, like, we were kind of still in the middle of COVID, right? Like, there wasn't a ton going on. We're all watching the bubble. And here's this kid that we don't expect hardly anything out of, playing a huge role in Miami's trip to the finals. So I do agree with you that kind of the sophomore season kind of dip was a little bit exaggerated, because I think we kind of overinflated our expectations for Tyler Hero. But I also had him on my list, and I couldn't really narrow it down, Joe. Like, I wrote down five guys. Tyler Hero was the first one that I did write down, and I give him credit. Like, he made that comment about being on the same plane as Luka and Trey, and then he absolutely smashed the preseason. Like, if you just were basing your opinions of the NBA off preseason results, he is in that range from that five game sample size, but we both know that that's not going to be the case going forward. But if he continues to close that gap, then that's great for him. But the other names I wanted to talk about, again, I really couldn't make a decision here. Derrick Rose, I think if the Knicks continue to beat the odds, like, quite literally, right? We noticed kind of 2 months ago that their win total was kind of sitting at 500 when they were 10 games over last year. And I wouldn't push back on somebody saying that they overachieved a little bit last year, but I've made my case plenty of times before that I think Tibbs teams in the regular season are for real. And if they do happen to continue that win percentage that they had last year, then I think Derrick Rose will be very much in the conversation for sixth man. Jordan Clarkson, obviously, I believe the favorite, and rightfully so. Elite scorer off the bench and on the team with the best record last year. And then I think kind of like almost like dollar store Jordan Clarkson is Buddy Hield at this point for the Kangs. And this is a long shot discussion talking about Buddy Hield. But if the Kings somehow snuck into the playoffs, or maybe even the play-in game, and Buddy Hield can get up to 17, 18 points a game, I think his name has to be at least in the discussion. Maybe he doesn't win it, but he's somebody that was kind of a little bit of an off-the-board play for me, trying to get a little cute here. And then I wrote it down as a joke because we were tilting Patty Mills in the first half tonight. But he did end 7 of 7 from 3. And if Kyrie is going to sit out the entire year and he continues to come off the bench, I think Patty Mills, he might be the favorite. Like, he's going to play a more expanded role than he did in San Antonio over really any of the last 3 to 4 seasons since Kawhi left. So I think Patty Mills is a legitimate candidate for this too. And maybe I'm just overreacting to the massive opening night performance and my love for International Patty, which I have to remind everybody, it's not International Patty season anymore. There's no FIBA coming up. There's no Olympics coming up. He's not in Olympic shape. He doesn't need to go score 30 points a game, but he sure looked great tonight.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. The other name, completely facetious, I'm going to throw out is Jordan Nwora just because of his game he had today. But I mean, speaking of Jordan Nwora, it's very clear he's going to have a role on this team, which I did 65 best ball drafts today. Do not recommend.
Oh my God.
I felt like the Jimmy Butler. I mean, I had 30 going at once, and it was just nonstop. Click, 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 click. I didn't auto draft. I did not auto draft once. Max was crying in his nursery. I didn't care. I just had to get these drafts done. So Serena, if you're listening, I apologize. But I loaded up. I got about 10% Jordan Noir today alone, which it makes me happy. Yeah, I like the Patty Mills call a lot, especially because it doesn't look like, you know, we're basing this off of one game now. But if Kyrie is going to miss the season, if Patty Mills isn't going to start, he's going to play a very, very dominant role off the bench. And almost, I'm not going to say like Lou Williams did when he would play 30 minutes a game off the bench and people would go, oh, just start him. He's not, shouldn't be sixth man of the year. Could be a similar situation too with Patty Mills. The other player, you know, again, I don't know if he's going to continue to start for so long, but if he shifts back to a bench role early in the season, I think Jordan Poole could be in the conversation for this as well. But that, I think, is a little bit more contingent on role. Moving on, you know, players aside, got those out of the way. NBA champions, who you got?
Well, I don't like saying this in front of you, and it doesn't look great after this one game sample size from opening night, but I've got Brooklyn, regardless of if Kyrie comes back or not. I think obviously their hopes increase if you add one of the best, most talented players in the league back to the team. Say what you want about his, you know, off the court opinions or antics, but on the court, this guy's a killer. And pairing him with Harden and Durant, like, I think we saw in the playoffs last year, Kevin Durant almost won that series by himself. Like, if we're just being honest and trying to throw mostly your Bucks homerism, but my fandom that I came into last year aside, I think this team just got better over the offseason. Another season under the belt for Nick Claxton. You bring back LaMarcus Aldridge. You bring in Patty Mills, DeAndre Bembry, Paul Millsap. Like, are any of those guys blowing you away? No, but all of them can contribute really key roles for this team in the regular season and in the playoffs. They're extremely versatile, even without Kyrie, and it's really hard for me to see them not being the favorite. So I feel like I just ate chalk for the last 30 minutes on this podcast, but I'm going with the Brooklyn Nets. I'm glad Steph isn't here as well.
I am not going with the Brooklyn Nets, and homerism aside, I'm going with the Milwaukee Bucks. I was on Mean Streets today with Meany, and he mentioned that, you know, you and Steph like the Bucks a long shot, or not even a long shot, but plus 900 is just a little bit too much of a long shot.
Yeah, it's too high
for the Bucks. But I, you know, when PJ Tucker, when he left, people are, all the Bucks just lost a huge piece. They did. I think the Bucks got better as well. I really do. I think the acquisition of Grayson Allen is huge. I don't know what capacity Rodney Hood will be able to play this year, but if it's any, I think that's a benefit. I think bringing back George Hill is huge. I think it's way better than Jeff Teague at backup point guard. I also think if Jordan Nwora becomes a part of this rotation, that is a massive benefit when they're in some kind of offensive slump. He's not going to be afraid to shoot. So I think you combine that. The Bucks have the monkey off their back, which alleviates some pressure. I guess you can also argue they have a target on their back now, which might add some pressure. But I think with the turmoil with Kyrie, you know, Philly's not doing anything. A lot of it has to do with the fact that I just don't believe in this Lakers team whatsoever. I think the Bucks are being a little underappreciated. They are my pick. Brooklyn would be my closer. I think it comes out of the East again this year.
Yeah.
So we were in lockstep almost the whole podcast. Shocker. But we are now a couple minutes away from tip-off of the Lakers and Warriors' first game in the Western Conference of the season after the Bucks won 127-104. For FTN, I am Joe Metz, JMetz34 on Twitter. My co-host, Zach Graham, Kweisenberg DFS on Twitter. If you have not signed up for FTN Daily's NBA package, if you sign up by 7 p.m. on Wednesday, October 20th, you can get $50 off of your package to celebrate the opening of the season. Otherwise, use promo code BEANS for a discount at checkout, BEANS. Shout out EZB. Have a good night, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam, Joe, and Zach. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at APFeifer24, at JMetz34, and at KweisenbergDFS. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.